episode 2 of Ladies of the Fright. I'm Lisa Quigley, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Mackenzie Kira.
And today on the show, we are talking about My Best Friend's Exorcism by Grady Hendrix. The back of the book says, high school sophomores Abby and Gretchen have been best friends since fourth grade. But after an evening of skinny dipping goes disastrously wrong, Gretchen begins to act different. She's moody, irritable, and bizarre incidents keep happening whenever she's nearby. Abby's investigation leads her to some startling discoveries, and by the time their story reaches its terrifying conclusion, the fate of Abby and Gretchen will be determined by a single question. Is their friendship powerful enough to beat the devil? Like an unholy hybrid of Beaches and The Exorcist, My Best Friend's Exorcism blends teen angst, adolescent drama, unspeakable horrors, and a mix of 80s pop songs into a pulse-pounding supernatural thriller.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. We've been waiting to talk about this book for months now.
Months.
It was one of the first books we had decided upon, like, that we were for sure going to talk about. So we've been planning on talking about this for at least 2 months, if not longer. Actually, probably closer to like 3 or 4. And like Mackenzie will attest to the fact that every time we get on the phone with each other, our conversation starts to drift towards this book and we have to stop ourselves.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's hard. It's such a good book. Like, you want to talk about it, but yeah, we have to leave room for Jesus.
Yeah. So we always tell each other, leave room for Jesus, leave room for Jesus. And we like try to direct the conversation elsewhere because we've been dying to talk about it. So I'm really excited that we're finally going to.
Me too. What do you want to start off with first, Lisa? You want to start off with some favorites? You want to start off with characters? What do you think?
Well, actually, I do want to start off with some favorites, but for some reason, the first time that I read this, because I just reread it like last week, mm-hmm. I didn't pay attention to the dedication. Did you look at that?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh my gosh. It is like one of the best dedications ever. So it says, for Amanda, who knows the reasons why. And then there's like a little star. And then at the bottom of the page, there's another star, like kind of indicating that there's more information. And it says, but if she doesn't, I would suggest she have her attorney consult both protective orders filed against her, the criminal complaint, which outlines these reasons in great detail, and maybe also her conscience, because disclosing the whereabouts of the bodies will finally bring some kind of closure for my family.
Oh my gosh.
I do not know what to make of that.
In the back. Do you see that dedication in the back too?
No, there's one in the back too. Oh my gosh, I gotta look.
It says Amanda Beth Cohen. Her loss has made us deeply aware of the dangers posed by the alligators who inhabit our marshes, creeks, and golf courses. A memorial shrubbery has been planted in her honor by the cafeteria.
Oh my gosh. So I didn't, I wonder if that's not in the paperback version, because I don't have yours.
I wonder if I have a different one.
Maybe that's what it might be. Maybe there's a different one in the paperback versus the
hardcover. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I had to point it out because I just thought, like, it's like the funniest, like, strangest, coolest, cleverest, like, dedication ever. Because, totally. Like, I'm sitting here, like, what are the reasons why? Is this true? Did they really, like, did something really happen? So I just thought that was kind of fun and wanted to point it out for, but now I'm really curious if there's different versions in the paperback versus the, because I don't have the one you have, the one about the alligators. That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
No, it's totally possible. And like the thing about this writer too, because what we've got Horror Store before this one, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So which Grady I still Hendrix haven't read. Yeah. So I gotta read that one because I've heard that's really good too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I loved Horror Store, but I think that, but like, there's just something about this one. There's something about how with the writing, you're just with it every single second of the page. Like, this is a sit down and read it all in one day kind of book.
Oh, Totally.
Absolutely.
Like, the first time I read it, I like sat down and then I just started reading. And then I looked, it was like maybe an hour or so later. And then I looked and I was already 80 pages in. I'm like, holy yeah. crap. Like, how did I get so far? Because it just takes you. It's one of those rare books that just takes you and grabs you from the very, very, very beginning.
Now, so that's actually kind of funny that you mentioned that, because it's actually the beginning that I had a hard time getting into. Like the beginning where they're at the roller skating rink, I was totally in that. Like the voice mm-hmm. was so young and so perfect. I mean, what'd she say? She's like, she was going to be Abby, like skate princess, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, I love those little quirks in the beginning. And so then like flash forward when they're older and like before they take the bad acid, I was sort of just like following along because I knew the book was good. So there was like a good like 25, 30 pages that I did just have to kind of go through. But I also expect that out of books in the beginning at this point.
Right. And what I think is cool about it is that it does like it's slower in the beginning, but I don't know. He does it in a way where you're committed and you're curious, like that very first chapter.
Yeah.
Which is actually Abby in the future.
The
very first chapter where I think this is what.
It's just like two pages though.
Yeah. Right? And I think this is what gets you to commit because you are like, okay, some crazy, crazy shit's going to go down. So then you're kind of okay with the slower stuff. Which it's not actually slow. It's like slow, but like in a good way because you're just like, actually, it's just like the progression of their friendship because you need that slowness in the beginning because you need to know how deep rooted their friendship goes in order to appreciate what comes next.
Oh, but, yeah. I mean, it's like 110% a roller coaster, this book, because you don't line up for the ride up the hill. You know, it's like you're all about for like that downhill spin. That's what you really want. You want that speed. So it's expected. I think it's absolutely expected. Some slow parts are. So yeah, the build was really well done. You know,
Like I said, like that first chapter, it starts off, the very first line is "The Exorcist is dead."
Solid first line.
Oh my God. Like such a good first line. Like I'm like,
so good.
And then I don't usually reread books. I want to reread books and I've been trying to make an effort to reread books, but a lot of times I'm just like, okay, I read that one. I want to read the next one. I want to read because I have limited time. So I just want to read more books I haven't already read, which I am trying to kind of remedy because I do think there's so much value in rereading a book because you glean things that you haven't, noticed. But with this one, the first time I read it, I read the last page and I immediately turned back to the first page and read. I didn't reread the whole thing right away, but I read the first 20 pages over again because I was just like amazed. It's like a book that once you get to the end and all the pieces are put together, you want to go back and see how those pieces were like laid out at the beginning. I did anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For me, it was more like I just didn't want to leave the characters, you know?
I didn't.
I was just not ready. I mean, we'll definitely get to it. But by the end of the book, I was a mess. That ruined my day. Not like the ending ruined my day, but like it was amazing writing. And I didn't want to leave it. I didn't want to leave the characters.
And this is one of those books that it's so rare to find where it's like you love it and you hate it. You love it because it's so good. And it's like one of like the most amazing experience. Like to me, it's just a purely pleasurable experience to read it. Even though there's some gross shit in here, it's like just,
it was so well done.
It's so well done. But then it also, I hate it because it's one of those books that I want to like throw across the room when it's done and also like burn everything I've ever tried to write because I'm just like, well, fuck. Well, now I can't write because he's already done it. He's already written the perfect book. But I love those kinds of books because even though I like love to hate them, it's like, it's inspiring too because it makes me like, now I have written in my notebook, write an ending like the ending in My Best Friend's Exorcism, like write an ending that's that good. Like this is one of my goals in life.
Yeah, it's this is actually, I don't know if I've told you this, but this is actually the first book that I have reread in probably close to like 3 or 4 years, just because you really don't have time to reread books in graduate school.
Right.
And so I always used to reread books, like especially as a kid, I would just like go to the end of the book and then flip right back to the beginning, like no problem.
Be but, like, ooh, I want to, and because you get used, yeah. You notice like stuff, more stuff the second time through because you know all the rest of the pieces.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I was actually really hesitant to go back into this world because I'm like, great, now I'm going to want to reread it 4 times or 5 or mm-hmm. 6. I'm only going to read this book. It's just Grady Hendrix from here on out. Like,
yeah.
So I was hesitant to like open up that magical box again because, yeah, you, this isn't fantasy per se, but you are definitely in another world. And I'm sure that to readers that are slightly older, that there's a sense of nostalgia also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Especially with the songs and everything that are included.
I love that the titles, the chapter titles are
songs.
Song titles.
Yeah.
From the 80s.
What a great touch.
Oh, it's so good. And it's also like song titles that are important to their friendship, like all their favorite songs. Like it, like these are probably the song titles that are on their best friend mix that they make or whatever. So, like,
yep. Oh yeah, probably, huh?
You know, I actually heard someone on Instagram told me that if you have Spotify, there's a My Best Friend's Exorcism playlist that's all the songs.
Oh, chapter titles. No, there isn't. Well, great. I'm just going to listen to that and cry later.
Well, there we go.
All right. Let's, okay. So what else do we love about like the characters and stuff? Let's do that.
I can't even. Okay. Well, you start. Cause there's too many things. You start.
Okay. I think that, cause this is something that I was like writing out earlier and Abby and Gretchen, that's the pair of best friends, they start out with each other, but they also start out with like more, you know, it's like we assume that Gretchen has got this boyfriend from camp, who we learn later is not the boyfriend from camp. We learn that Gretchen definitely has parents who care about her, even though they kind of suck. Abby has parents that are more or less there, at least they were a lot in her childhood. And they have their friends. They have Glee and Margaret, mm-hmm. And also all of their teachers. Because in the beginning, it sounds like their teachers are there for them too. So I thought that it was really interesting that with the characters, they had everybody, and then slowly throughout the story, especially Abby, they all get stripped away. You know,
yeah.
And so I think that was one of my favorite parts about Abby's build is we watched her. Kind of like we watched her coming of age story to a certain extent, you know, because she has her job. She gets all of the stuff, like she gets everything in her room on her own with her own money. Abby's got this handled, or at least she's trying really hard. So I love that.
Yeah, and I love that Abby, because Abby's parents don't have a lot of money. They work really hard. Well, her dad doesn't really work hard. Her dad's kind of like
He's like depressed, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Life isn't like exactly what he thought. And he just kind of has these really failed, half-hearted business attempts.
Yeah.
And he just kind of tinkers and he's sad and sits around. And then her mom just works really hard to pay all the bills. I think her mom's a nurse.
Yeah.
I love the part in the book, which I think is a turning point for Abby, where she kind of just decides, you know what? I am not. Is that your puppy saying hi?
Sorry, they're saying hi.
Hi. But yeah, I love that Abby kind of has this pivotal moment where she's like, I am not going to let my situation like dictate who I am. I'm going to take charge of my own life. And so she gets a job and she makes the most out of every situation. And she saves up for the things she wants, and she doesn't rely on her parents to take care of her. And she, even though she lives with her parents and they're very loving, she kind of starts taking care of herself, and
it does, yeah, which
even like furnishes her room with stuff that she buys and with her own money. So
I like that she has to keep the moldy house smell out of her room too. You know, every time she goes into her room, she closes the door quickly to keep the smell of the house out.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, the rest of my house. She's kind of like ashamed of her family, I think. And even though it's kind of, it's like that teenage angst where your parents are doing their best, they're working really hard, they're dealing with the adult stuff, and then you're just a teenager, like, oh my gosh, my embarrassing dirty house and my parents who can't, you know, buy me nice stuff, and I don't want my friends. Oh, and she also, so Abby has a what do you call it, scholarship for the very fancy school that she goes to. It's a very, very nice, very like high profile private school, and she's Catholic there school, on scholarship. I think it's a Catholic school. Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely, if it's not Catholic, they definitely have some very conservative values.
Yes.
And it's very like, I think most of the kids are very serious and they go on to go to Ivy League schools, and it's like
a straight prep school. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And she goes there on scholarship, so her parents don't pay. And it's like her way of like, you know, she's having this better chance at life, but at the same time, she's surrounded by all these other kids whose parents are wealthy enough to send them there. So there's kind of like this divide.
Totally. And in a sense, that sort of makes Abby like the perfect protagonist, because she's already used to sort of dealing with this different, like, sorry, I'm getting my thoughts in order here. She's already used to kind of being different and having to think for herself and think outside the box. And so even though Abby is kind of an underdog, like her soul isn't, you know, like who she's been built up to be is completely and totally capable of this. She just has to realize it.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that when they're little girls, so they start in the very first chapter or so, they start off like they're like 10 years old and they just meet or whatever. But like Margaret is kind of
she's a bitch.
She's like a little bitch. Abby puts up this like invitation to her awesome roller skating birthday party. And then the very next day, Margaret puts up an invitation in the classroom for like kids to come ride horses at her house on the exact same day as Abby's party. And then nobody except for Gretchen shows up. So like, I always thought it was funny that Margaret like starts off as like, I mean, in the very beginning, she's like this like bitch, and then Gretchen comes and that's how Abby and Gretchen connect. But then fast forward to high school and they're all best friends. So I thought, like, what do you think about that? Like, that's so...
Sure. I read it as two different ways. Like, I read it as... because, remember, like, Tommy Cox comes in and he, like, saves the day because he's, like, the coolest senior and they're a bunch of fourth graders. So I think the fact that, like, he's come in and kind of been like, Abby's a cool chick.
That,
you know?
Gets like, Abby into the cool club. That's the moment Abby gets into the cool club. So...
I think so. And I think it's also just a testament to how small their school is. It's like, you really can't be picky when you have a school that is as small and as like, you know, like as theirs.
Right.
So I don't think that you'd necessarily get to pick your friends, but I definitely think that that helped Margaret. Cause I bet for the first time ever, Margaret actually felt jealous of Abby.
Yeah, true. Because so Tommy Cox, what, skates into Abby at her party, and then he comes and says goodbye, or he apologizes to her at school in front of everyone and gives her a Coke.
And gives her a Coke, a cool Coke, for her busted lip, because she gets a busted lip from it,
It's,
and then she keeps the soda can. And she keeps that soda can.
I love, I love that part, and that line, like, this is one of the best lines in the book, although there's many.
Mm-hmm.
There is a line on at the bottom of page 23, and it's when Tommy Cox gives her the Coke.
Yeah.
And then he gives her a high five. And it says, his hand was cool and strong and warm and hard but soft. It's like
it was just everything. All at
once. It's like just such a good description of when you're that age and like and a cool older boy, like you high five, and it's like all those feelings all at once, all those mm-hmm. sensations all at once, and it's like it just keeps going. It's like and it's like cool and warm. Those are two opposite things. Hard but soft. They're opposites, but it's like all of those things.
She just got flooded. Yeah.
She's just like, oh, sensation. You know? It's like so cool. I love it. Oh, so great.
It was so good. It was so good. So here's something that I was thinking about. Do you think that Abby and Gretchen deserved each other?
What do you mean?
Like, I noticed the second time I read this book, I noticed something that I didn't the first time through. Second time through, I noticed that both of them were only children. I mean, obviously before I knew that, but this time I was like, oh, that's actually kind of a big deal, because if Gretchen or Abby had had any siblings, this could have gone very differently. Yeah. But they really only have each other. They grew
like
up
they needed
with each
a
other.
Sister, like yeah, or exactly. that person that's that close.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess deserved each other is more like did everything that they do, like, you think they were worthy of this like really strong friendship? I mean, their friendship like beats the devil back to yeah. a certain extent, you know, but they were raised very differently. So it's like, I think that they absolutely did. Like, I think that they both needed a sister.
Yeah. That close. It just, to me, I think it's, yes and no. Like, I think that at that age, like, I, as an adult, I have a lot of really close friends. Like, you're one of them, obviously.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, cool.
You're only in my wedding. But, you know, I have a lot of, like, friends that I consider, like, best friends or, like, some of my closest friends. And it's not like how, like, when you're that age, like, there's that line where in the beginning where Abby remembers when the word friend could draw blood. And it was like at that age, especially like high school, like when you have a best friend, it's like,
it is everything.
That, yeah. And it's more than a best friend. Like, it's almost like your first relationship, except it's platonic, because everything you do gets passed under the scrutiny of your best friend. You don't make a move without consulting your best friend. You don't like a boy without consulting your best friend. You don't get a haircut.
Yeah,
most likely. True. Yeah. It's like this extreme, you just, at this age, you like, it's like you need that closeness or also you, I think at that age, your emotions don't know how to be tame. So yeah. Like, you just feel everything. It's like when she slaps the hand, she felt everything. So I think it's like that with best friend. Because I had, like, a high school best friend. And it was so much of this book reminds me of that. It was like, we would go, like, months where we didn't spend a night apart. We would take turns. 3 nights we would stay at my house. And then her mom would be like, okay, it's time for you to come home. So then I'd be like, Mom, I'm going to go over to her house. And we would spend the night at her house. And then we'd just ping pong back and forth between houses.
Yeah.
And it was like we lived together because we were just like with each other all the time. And it was very like a lot of it was like this. It was like we did not make a move without each other. We didn't get a job without talking to each other first. We didn't make life decisions without. It was like very serious.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think it's just at this age, you can't help but once you find that one person who's your best friend, that's your best friend, and then you latch on and you move on from there. So I think it's, I don't know. I think it's very like, it's touching. It gets you because it's like so true to the only time in your life that you can have this kind of friendship is at this age, I think. Because, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just because of that age and everything is heightened.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. My best friend got kicked out of school with me. when I got expelled, my best friend slept in class and got in fights and stuff for about like 6 months until the school finally asked him to leave.
Yeah, it's like that serious. It was, we were like that. It was like we would we would have taken the fall for each other. We would have done any of this for. But then it also, you know, when I reread this, I kind of like had more thoughts on it than I did the first time. I honestly think, I mean, yes, it's a great story. It's a story about possession, best friendship and possession, but I also think
about best friendship and possession.
Yeah, but I really think you could read it as a metaphor for like, okay, so you have this best friendship that lasts from when you're like 9, 10, whatever, however old, all the way through high school. But then when you start to grow up and you change, it doesn't stay the same. And, you know, and I had this experience too. It was like me and my best friend, we started to grow up and it started to become impractical for us to move through life as one person, you know, which is basically what we did for like all of high school. And well, it started like we started to have different interests or one of us started to go this way and one of us was more interested in this, or we would like a boy and then that would take us out of our twosome that we were already so tightly wound up in. And so I almost think that the way, like with Gretchen getting possessed, it's like we all kind of, if we've had this kind of best friendship, we've experienced this to a lesser degree. Obviously, yeah. Our best friend didn't get possessed, but you go through this like heartbreaking, like,
not to my knowledge anyway.
Yeah, I hope not. I don't know. But you go through this like thing where it's like your best friend isn't the same person that they always were.
Yeah.
When you were kids, and it's like this heartbreak of like, is our love strong enough to carry this friendship through to our adulthood? Or
totally,
you know, and can we still make it even though everything is changing because we're becoming adults? So even though it's not like about that on the surface, I think you could totally read it that way.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. I think that their relationship was absolutely strong enough and well-crafted enough to beat the devil. Like, well, I mean, to beat the demon, but
yeah.
do you want to talk about The Exorcist? Like the actual, like The Exorcist inside the book, not the movie.
Oh, my gosh. This guy, right? Like,
he's amazing. I love The Exorcist.
One of the best characters ever. Brother Lemon. So, okay.
Brother Lemon.
Back up.
Here. Wait. I have a quote.
Okay.
I have a quote. Let's see. So, when they're at the school and they're all doing their performance, you know, their performance of like, what is it that they're strong enough for the Lord or something like that? What is it? Like,
it's like
a display of muscle, like, and they're displaying muscle.
Okay, but I just have to tell. I know you're.
Yeah.
I just, what was that?
That I have whole, no idea.
Does this happen at high schools? Okay, confession: I was homeschooled for almost all of my school career, and I did go to public school for 1 year in high school, and then I stopped, but. Did they do, it's like an assembly, I guess it's like a lunchtime assembly, and they have this like group of weightlifting Christian missionaries doing a show, like,
what? Yeah, well, it's like greatest... it's provocative, you know, it's like, here, okay, so here's the quote that I found too.
Okay,
it goes, okay, so Elijah, the second youngest brother, took center stage. Sometimes, he said, when I'm shifting steel and sweating blood and I don't think I'm going to make the clean and jerk, or when I'm stuck on the hang and can't get the snatch, suddenly I'll feel lighter, like someone has taken my load. And that's when I look up and say, thank you, God. Thank you. That was you taking my load.
Like, what is this?
Oh, my gosh.
And then the next paragraph is, people were laughing so hard they thought they'd never return to normal. Father Morgan sat in the front row looking up at the massive bodybuilders all gleaming and glistening in the spotlights, with his mouth hanging open in awe. Major looked unreadable. The Lemon brothers seemed to think the laughter meant they were on the right track. which everyone's just laughing because he just said take my load like over and over. This,
oh yeah, these guys, if he can't get the great snatch, if he's, yeah,
I, oh my god,
yeah, if he and can't clear the jerk, like it's amazing.
Okay, so it's the Lemon Brothers Faith and Fitness show. Okay. So it's like about faith and fitness, but it's at their, it's like an assembly for their school. So I don't know if it's like lunch. Oh, once a month, Wednesday assembly put on a barn burner. So yeah. I guess they do some kind of show once a month at the school, but it was just like the most strange, bizarre, I would pay money to see this show.
Oh, yeah.
Purely for the entertainment of it. And it's like and these guys are like, they're trying to lift these beams and then they make the high school boys try and they can't do it. And then one of them does it all on his own and he makes it look like a cross and he's like,
with like one arm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, let me, I'm like, Jesus is helping me lift this with the power of the cross and all this stuff. And oh my gosh, it's like hysterical.
Oh no, my absolute like, oh yeah. And like he makes, and Abby chooses him or asks him for help because at this point in the book, Gretchen is like way possessed by a demon, or at least Abby knows that.
Well, Abby, I don't think Abby really thought of it quite yet because Abby's at her wit's end. Abby's like, what the hell is wrong with my best friend? She's like doing all this mean stuff. She like isn't showering. And yeah. Abby's kind of like run through the list of like what could be wrong with her. Is she depressed? Are her parents treating her badly? Did she get raped that night? Like she doesn't know what the heck happened. And then Brother Lemon
sees points the demon, at
Gretchen and says, I see the demon. And then what's even crazier is he says something about it having the head of an owl. And so what's really crazy to me is, like, because these guys are obviously hacks and not frauds, but they're not really, like, connected to anything super. But do you think that he actually sees the demon because he, or do you think it was part of his show? Do you think he actually saw it?
No, I think he actually saw it only because of the things he said afterwards that there is really no way he could have known. Like he said, like bringing up the owl.
Right.
And then when he started like listing off to Abby, like all of the things that like should have gone, or he lets Abby tell him. That's the other thing. Right. So like they meet and he's like, tell me what's going on with your friend. And Abby's sort of like, I don't really want to do that. Like you're a stranger. I really shouldn't be talking to you. But she's just so desperate that she's like, okay, these are the things that are going on. And Brother Lemon's like,
it's like her last
by any chance, how do animals act around her? Or how do owls, like, are there a lot of owls? Like he says something that Abby hadn't mentioned. And so it's almost like,
it's like he's connected to something real, but then he's like so out in left field,
totally
kind of caught up in his own drama, not drama in his life, but like he likes is caught up in the theatrics,
totally,
of the thought of being this guy who could cast out a demon from her. But I think he really does see her because and the first time I read it, I was like, oh, he's definitely like a hack or whatever, but then, and he's like young, right? Like practically a teenager, maybe like 18 or something, or I couldn't really get, but he wasn't very old. He's like a young guy. He's the youngest, I think, of all his brothers.
Yeah.
And but then reading through it, and then you know, he's like, I see a demon in the shape of a great owl with his dark shadow obscuring her face, and then and all, like you said, then all the stuff, it's like, I don't know. It was just like so bizarre and
totally.
It's like he did see the demon. He just didn't really. He's just immature. He doesn't really know.
Yeah.
What to do to get rid of it. He just has probably seen movies of how to do it or something.
Exactly. Well, yeah. It says that. I think he watches his dad do this.
Yeah. He's like, I've seen my dad do it, and he wants to be. You can kind of like gauge from his undertone is that none of his brothers take him seriously. His dad doesn't really take him seriously, and he wants to be. Prove himself as a man by being able to get rid of the demon, like, and prove himself like worthy, you know, of the Holy Spirit or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy.
That guy's amazing.
What do you think about the German milkshakes?
Oh my God.
That was insane. And like, so that was one of the really cool things about like rereading it. Because I knew that something was up, because like in the text, it's just like little scraps of notebook paper, right?
Right.
Little scraps of notebook paper that Margaret has written down her calorie count on. Pardon me. So when you see the food intake going down and the milkshakes increasing, you know something's wrong, because for a while it looks pretty normal. You know, it's like, I had some carrots and then I had some milkshake or German milkshake. It's like, and then I had, you know, a cantaloupe. It's like when all of the food goes away and it's like, then I had 15 milkshakes. That's when, you know, as a reader, something's really wrong here, but I don't know what. And right, so I read that with like a particular level of distress the second time around.
Yeah. And also, I think I saw that happening as I was reading it, especially the first time you see it happening. And I just thought, oh, she's like getting like anorexia or definitely an eating disorder of some kind, because she's starting to replace most of her food with these milkshakes. But I never saw that coming.
I never saw that coming. No,
that is like the most disturbing, gross thing I've ever read.
How long was the tapeworm that came out of her? It was like 35 feet.
Yes. So it was, in these milkshakes are tapeworm eggs. And Gretchen is like feeding these Margaret, telling her she's, and first it works because Margaret starts to get so skinny, and Margaret's like, I'm so hot. And Margaret has always worried about her weight. She starts to get really skinny and feel like, oh, I'm just like so hot. And then out of nowhere, she's like not at school anymore. And
because it approached that dangerous level.
Yeah. Well, and then Abby goes over there and she goes to her room and it like smells in there and she looks terrible and she looks like a skeleton. But then when the blanket comes down, she looks pregnant.
Yeah.
And Abby's like, did she get pregnant? No, you don't go from flat stomach to pregnant in like 2 weeks or however long it's been, or 2 months even. And no, and then the tapeworm wants the ice cream.
Yeah, it comes out for the ice cream. Is,
and then the tapeworm's like,
because it was starving.
I know.
Because she starved herself. So like, oh, it was so bad. Oh, it was so bad. I read that with like just the fate, like my mouth was just open, dude, while I read that part. It was so bad. And the dog drags it out of her.
The dog pulls
the dog tapeworm pulls it out.
She goes to the hospital and they pull out like even more, like it says like something like 30 something feet of tapeworm.
It's so gross.
So gross, but so good, because like who would like it's
who
just
would do
brilliant
that?
Who would do that, and who would think of it? And it's just such to a someone like else. A vile thing to do
else. Yeah.
It's so great.
It was so great. And okay, so here's something that I wasn't entirely sure belonged in the book.
Okay,
so I thought that we could have done perfectly well without but I also wonder if this is part of setting it up. So, I mean, tell me what you think.
Okay, sure.
The superstition, like the story, the creepypasta about Molly, about the girl that's killed in the raped and killed in the forest, right? That's like, that's kind of their urban legend, you know, that they keep passing around and passing down. I wonder if Grady Hendrix like introduced that as a way for us to be like, aha, that's what happened. She's possessed with the ghost of Molly, or evil things happen back there. Like, so I don't know. I was wondering, because I mean, that's part of it that very easily could have been just left out. You know, it's like Gretchen goes into the woods. There's this weird, creepy building and she's possessed and that's the end of it. You know,
do you feel like
we needed this like background urban legend?
I don't feel like it was necessary. I don't feel like it hurt the book any, but I do feel like, I mean, it doesn't really come back and play a pivotal role in the book that I remember. Nothing really stood out to me. So I feel like it could have not been in there, but I think, you know, maybe the reason for it, you know, I think the reason for it, if I were to assign a reason, is just if you notice throughout the book, there's like this pervasive like building sense of fear in the culture, in like the country and the culture and the atmosphere of the time, mm-hmm. where and this was like a thing that was true of this time setting, is people were unnecessarily, or I don't know if that's the right word, but they were afraid, like excessively afraid of Satanism, and and like they were doing specials on it on TV, and like, so I think that might have been part of it, is just that there's like this fear of like
satanic ritual. Yeah.
Stuff and rituals and things going on, and men doing like scary things in the name of Satan and to women. And so I think maybe that was just to show that this was a topic of conversation for the time. Because then they do also throughout the book talk about like, oh, this special on Satanism showed on the news, and then kids are talking about it. Oh, well, I heard so and so did this and sacrificed such and such to Satan or whatever. I think that might be why it's there, just to show that this was like part of the lexicon of the time.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I can get behind that.
What I think is interesting is that, is that they were so scared of Satanism, and it was like this pervasive fear that was going through the collective consciousness of the time or whatever. And yet here's someone right under their nose who's like actually possessed. Like, that is a trip to me. And I think it also raises a lot of questions of like, with like religion and like if you look through the book, like the author really kind of pokes fun at religion in a way, not entirely, but just at some of the, like, for example, like in the beginning, Gretchen's the one who's not allowed to watch like certain movies or listen to certain music or whatever.
Madonna's way banned. Yeah. Well,
and it seems like it's because of these like certain religious values her parents have. So I almost think it's ironic that then it's Gretchen who gets possessed by the devil, or not the devil, but a demon. And then it's like, well, if the author's poking fun at religion and this sort of thing, but then here's a story about someone getting possessed by a devil. It's like, are demons real? If they're real, is God real? Like, there's all these other questions that kind of come about. And then if it's real, what is it? If it's a demon, where does it come from? I just think these are really interesting questions that it raises.
Totally. I completely agree. I definitely read the beginning wondering who was going to get possessed. Because to me, yeah, Gretchen definitely did seem like more like who would be more of the hero in this sense, you know? But when I learned it was Abby, that's kind of when it all sort of like steamrolled together of no, she's been built to be this kind of like this really good heroine. And yeah, I just loved it, man.
I just loved it. I could read it again and again. It's like,
I could too.
So I don't know. It just does something to me.
Do we want to talk about the end?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Do you have anything else before we like talk about
ending? We can do it. We can talk about the end.
When I refer to the end in this book, I really start with the exorcism scene.
Yeah.
First, you know, you've got what I like, the part where I get chills, and I get chills every single time. I mean, I've only read it twice, but both times I got chills at the exact same part. And it's like, you know, the exorcist just bails. He gets too freaked out by the exorcism. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go get my dad. And then he just like never comes back. And Abby's left there alone.
My very favorite quote is like what he says prior to bouncing is when he says, you know, he's like, I'm about to fight Andres, I better protein load. And then he eats a chicken leg. Like,
he's like not taking it seriously. He's like, he's doing it like in his mind. He's like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be so cool. I'm going to just exercise some demons. I'm going to like pump some iron, and we're going to, I'm going to wash my hands and go home and work out and call it a day. And he's just like not emotionally connected to it at all. He bails, and Abby tries, like, you got to give her, like things have gotten crazy. She's like hallucinating, like,
yeah.
Andres, the demon, is doing all this crazy shit to her, making her see stuff that's not there. And she's like going. She's really, really, really trying to exorcise this demon by using the prayers that the exorcist left. And she's, her voice is hoarse. She feels defeated. She finally lays down.
She gives up.
She gives up.
Well, because like that, this power that she's been raised with, I mean, she got a scholarship into this like private super religious school. And so the thing that was supposed to have like the ultimate power doesn't.
It means nothing to her, and she feels no emotional connection to it. It's not, she's not religious. She doesn't believe in this stuff.
No.
So what I find to be, well, where I start getting the chills is when they're laying on the floor, Abby gave up, and she hears the song "We Got the Beat" in her head.
From
the very first time when they roller skated on the rink, the very first song, the very first moment their friendship was solidified, she hears that and she starts singing "We Got the Beat." And mm-hmm. then the part, it's like I get chills just talking about it right now. The part where I get chills is Abby stands up and she says, "Tommy Cox."
Yep.
I'm gonna cry like reading it right now, because it's like, this is the part where I tear up here when I read it. And she's like, "Tommy Cox, defend me in battle. Be my protection against the wickedness and snares of this world. May Tommy Cox and his holy can of Coca-Cola rebuke you, Satan, and all your works. I pray in his name."
Yes.
And then she just, and then it's like, I have chills right now. I'm like, oh, that part. And then she gets up and she's like, "By the power of Phil Collins, I rebuke you. By the power of Phil Collins, who knows that you coming back to me is against all odds. In his name, I command you to leave this servant of Genesis alone." And then she just starts going on, and it's like everything that means something to her, and specifically to her and Gretchen, everything that made their friendship mean something, all that feeling that they feel, like all of that teenage wonder and angst and love and terror and anxiety and just everything that made them best friends, that bound them together, that's what she uses to get rid of the demon. And I just think that's so amazing. Like, I could unpack this ending for the rest of my life, because I think there's layers and layers to it.
So many.
I think it just makes it like, it's like what you said in your review, where it's like she has to use a different brand of faith. It's like the faith that it was stale. It's not a real faith to her. To her, she has to dig deep into what makes her feel, what makes her blood pump, what makes her like just ecstatic about being alive, what she has faith in. And it's not this, you know, centuries year old prayer that means nothing to her. It's Tommy Cox's Coke can, and it's Phil Collins, and like, you know, it's like, it's so amazing. It's like the best. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I could go on forever and ever about this. Like, I'm not even joking. So it's your turn.
It's so well done, because it's so freaking good. Like, I don't know if anyone has done that yet. I don't know if anybody has tried. Like, because I mean, all of the other, like, the other exorcist movies, the other books about exorcism, like in the end, it's conquered by like God, you know,
right.
At least. And I mean, you know, I haven't read all of the exorcism books out there. I've read several, but not all of them. So I think that it's just incredible that Grady Hendrix decided, no, their friendship is more powerful than anything out there.
Yeah.
And I think that is just like personal, like I that's just, it's incredible. And like you said, it just like, it gives you chills just reading about it.
It does.
And then
I love you, Gretchen Lang. You are my reflection and my shadow, and I will not let you go. We are bound together forever and ever until Hallie's Comet comes around again. I love you dearly and I love you queerly, and no demon is bigger than this. I throw my pebble and its name is Gretchen Lang, and in the name of our love, be gone. Be gone. Like, so good. And then the demon goes.
And he leaves.
And it's like, no. Amazing.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like, the ending of this book, it just strikes so many wonderful freaking chords, because this is, you know, it's like, and maybe this is a discussion for another day too, but like, Abby is finding out that to her personally, this religion is antiquated, and so she has to find something new, and this is the most powerful thing that she knows, and clearly it's the most powerful thing that Gretchen knows too, because it works.
And it's the demon laughs at her when she's saying the prayers, like, what are you trying to do? Like, you're just saying some words. But the demon has to leave once she hits on something that's true. The demon's like, wow, there's real power in that. That now you're speaking words that have power, and it's just so well done. And then I love the ending, the very last line of the book, which goes like, because then they go on and it kind of wraps up. And the cool thing about this, or the sad thing about this, the thing that makes it bittersweet, is like, things are not really solved happily once the demon goes away, because all of this wreckage, that all the stuff Gretchen did, then all the stuff Abby did trying to, or all the stuff Abby got wrapped up in trying to fight this. So, you know, Abby's parents, they move, so they go live far away from Gretchen, and like the exorcist kind of comes forward and like admits to a bunch of stuff he didn't do just to help Abby get off, you know, from the law or whatever. Anyway, so it's like all this stuff, it's not neatly wrapped up with a nice little bow, which I think is so good, because that's not how growing up works. Like, when you go through this big ordeal of growing up, it's like, you can't look back at how things were. It's like, life is moving forward now, and it's different, and it's changed, and you can't go back to having the exact same, like, their best friendship will never be the same as it was before this happened. Their love for each other is always there, but they can't go back to that time, and none of us can, which I think is the point. Like, none of us went through like our best friend being possessed by the devil, but none of us can go back to those years and how big things felt, and how important every moment felt. We can never go back to that same level of feeling. I don't think I'd want to, because it's a lot harder to be a teenager. However, like a bittersweet part of it, because there, as hard as it is, it's also
it's just that time.
It's magical too, because there's like a lot of wonder and a lot of, but there's a lot of angst, and there's, so it's, you can never go back to that time before.
I really like too how their relationship ended with the worst thing happening, and not necessarily even just being possessed was the worst thing happening. The worst thing happening for them was that they were apart.
That like Abby's parents moved. Mm-hmm.
They moved away from each other. They weren't allowed, like, Gretchen wasn't allowed to see Abby for a long time. So the worst thing that they could have imagined happened, mm-hmm. and yet they still got through it. So,
and I love that they stay friends throughout the rest of their lives. Like,
yeah,
it's not always with that level of intensity, but they always have that love for each other. And the very last sentence, which I don't think we should spoil the last sentence. Do you, or do you want to just go for it?
I mean, I
can go for it.
I've got it queued up and ready, man.
Go for it. You do it. We've already spoiled all the shit.
Oh yeah, we've spoiled everything. That's the point. Abby Rivers and Gretchen Lang were best friends on and off for 75 years. And there aren't many people who can say that. They weren't perfect. They didn't always get along. They screwed up. They acted like assholes. They fought. They fell out. They patched things up. They drove each other crazy. And they didn't make it to Hallie's Comet. But they tried.
Oh, I cried so hard. Like, especially the first time and the second time I cried when I read that. Like, it's... And it's rare that a book makes me cry. And it's just, I was like, but they tried. And it's,
they tried.
And it's like so true of life. It's like such a beautiful portrayal of friendship and just how long their friendship lasted and how they had moments where they weren't as much in touch because of other life situations or they're having babies or whatever, but they always came back to each other at the moments when it mattered most. And Gretchen is actually with Abby the moment she dies in old age. Nothing bad happens. But
again,
but it's like, happens. And then Gretchen's with her and it's like, yeah, they didn't make it to Hallie's. Is it Hallie's Common or Haley's Common? I guess.
I think it's Hallie's. I think that I just said it wrong.
I don't really know. But either way, they wanted to make it to when it came around again. It was going to be like 92 years later. But they tried, they didn't make it, but it's only because Abby died, you know? So,
yeah.
And I love how the whole novel, it's not very long, but it spans like Abby's whole life pretty much without feeling like they left anything out, like he left anything out. So anyway.
Totally.
Oh, so good.
It was the best. It is such a good book. I want to reread it again now.
I know. I think it's going to be one of those books that I just revisit when I feel like feeling those things. And it's so funny because I didn't really,
when you feel like sobbing.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't really like, I was reading through it again. I'm like, oh yeah, I noticed this. And I was just like enjoying the read. And then I didn't realize you actually finished your reread a couple days before me and you posted online. You were like, oh, I just read the end and I'm crying. And I was like, I just don't think I'm going to cry the second time around because I know what's coming, but I still cried at Tommy Cox's Spokane. And then I cried at the very last line. I just sat there for a minute and I'm just like, I closed the book and I just like cried. I'm like, I need to feel this. Like, it feels so good.
It solidly wrecks you.
Yeah. It's like in like the best way. So
totally.
I'm really, 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 really happy this exists because it's definitely one I'm going to revisit over and over whenever I want to go back to that. Because we can't go back, but we can read about it.
Right? We can. It's so true.
Oh. Well, I think that's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. So this has been the second episode of Ladies of the Fright, and it's brought to you by our savings account. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Also, check out our webpage at LOTF. That's ladiesofthefright.com. And you can catch us February 28th through March 4th when we'll be live at StokerCon. Those episodes will be airing in two Mondays. The date for that, Lisa, is the 5th, I believe, right?
March 5th. March 5th, we'll start releasing some of the interviews from StokerCon, although we're hoping those will span a few episodes. Also follow us on or subscribe on iTunes because we are available on iTunes now and Google Play if that's how you listen.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. I'm Mackenzie Kira.
I'm Lisa Quigley.
And stay dark and stormy.
Bye-bye.